Okay, good afternoon, everybody.
Steam bar.
It is a steam bar.
Oh,
there you go, Nick.
Nick, put your name on there.
Oh, sure.
Yep. A lot of poetry.
Are we going to go after all of them?
All of it today. A lot. Thank you, Nick. So we've got Thomas. Did you saw that login? I sent you an email.
Yeah.
Got it.
Still wasn't working.
Okay, we'll get it working before the end of today. Definitely get it working. Thomas, Joey, Chris.
Yep.
I'll put your name down on my cheat list. What's your surname, Chris?
B-A-R-R-Y.
Ashvin, everybody welcome Ash.
Hello.
He was in my course here a few years ago and he's come back for some more punishment. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Not really. But we welcome Ash here. That's really good to have you here. And then we've got Ian. And we've got Chris. No.
Greg.
I just can't get my head around that. Greg. Okay. Greg?
Nobody.
Were you here last week, Greg?
No, I had to get my opinion.
Okay, so you're a new boy as well.
Yeah.
New boy in the class. Two new boys. And Jack and Nicholas.
Yes.
And we're waiting still for others, but we have to start.
Can I just interrupt you before you
definitely
start?
Can interrupt.
I need to know names of new students, and not continuing, but new to start off with, who are able to attend the ACU induction, which is next Friday, the 20th. It's an all-day thing, leaving here at 9, returning at 3 at Strathfield. So we're organising transport, which is why I need to know who is coming. So I've already got one name. Same, exactly the same. So you've been there, done that. I need new students first. And then I already know, Nicholas, you're interested in attending because you haven't gone. Joey?
Yeah, okay.
But this is like, you need 100%. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I don't want to pressure anyone to go in if they're not 100% able to. Anyone else? Ian?
Yeah.
So 50 yes or 100 yes?
100.
Jack, maybe?
150.
You have to think about it? Alright.
No, I'm not going.
You're not going for sure. There you go. See? Honesty. Best policy. Alright. Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you. And everybody in the room here, plus those that aren't here, have all got free tickets to Bell Shakespeare's As You Like It on the 24th of March. So stay in the course until then, otherwise you'll miss out on a free ticket worth $75 to adults. And you're not going to get the ticket beforehand. You're not able to sell it in advance. It will be given to you at the door. No scams. Now, this class is being recorded. We're going to... Now, who's this just entering the room? So, remind me of your name, please.
Scott,
that's right. Scott is going to sit next to... Why don't you sit there between Ian and Ash? That'd be wonderful. Ian and Ash. So, Scott, you look mighty hot. You ran. You're a good boy. And next to you, you have got Ash, who is a new boy. So introduce yourself to Scott. And on your right, you've got Ian. Thanks for making the effort, Scott. That's brilliant. I know what it's like out there. I had to walk up the hill too. I kept seeing these taxis going past me. Now, we're going to get onto the poetry, but before we get onto the poetry, I just want to take a step backwards, because all of you now have got your login and your password, unless you just arrived today, your login and your password for Leo. So I just want to show you where that is and what's been happening on there, because things have been happening there. So there is the Leo site for this unit. And there are announcements, and there's the unit outline, and here's a practice blog space where you're doing your blogs. Now if you click on there, whoops, okay, I have to enter this, let me go down here, got to make this. So here is Stephen's entry. Now here is Stephen's blog. Who am I? Make that a bit bigger. Who am I? Who are you? I am me, but as well I am you. We are all the same, you and me, regardless the differences, regardless our looks, our stories, our thoughts, our philosophies. We are the same, you and me. Make that a little bit smaller to fit in there. And he's got a picture there. I can get this down to proper size. And at the bottom, it says, read the rest of this topic. He's written 300 words. And there's a picture of him. You saw him here last week. Extrapolating, who am I? Extrapolating that can take a very long time. As I'm not young, nor have I had a plain and boring featureless adventure, I'm one who goes to the furthest extremes to get the most out of life. I'm sure that some of that has leaked through already. Born in California, etc., etc. I'm not going to read it all out. You can read this yourself. And at the bottom, I have made a comment. Steve, this is a wonderful first blog. I love the straightforward directness of what you have to say. And I love the images you've used to capture the essence of the short poem. So whenever you see a blog, you can reply. And what replying means is that you can make a comment. And I want you to do your blogs and comment on each other's work. That's part of what we're doing. It's a way of encouraging you to write poems, stories, prose pieces, and a way of interacting with each other. Let's see if anybody else has written something on here. So I'm going to go back. The practice blog, and who else is here? There's Michael. Now Michael's not in the room today, so we won't look at his, but there's Joey. That's Joey here. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yep. And there it says, read the rest of this topic. What's Joey done? Okay, he's done a comment on Richard Tipping's poem, which is really interesting. He says, Richard Tipping's poem is a celebration of mangoes using language that personifies, allowing mangoes to become artful protagonists and comparing the monotony of cigarettes to their explosive fun ways. The poem interprets a paradox of sensuality, how something that feels and tastes so delightful and is a positive good in the world could at the same time be labelled sinful or wrong, seducers, worse than Adam's apple by moral authority. The repetitive poetic device applied to this poem, mangoes are, mangoes are, mangoes are, mangoes are, mangoes are, you remember that? The repetitive poetic device applied to this poem allows the author to make several short statements within each stanza that put together says to me that mangoes have many characteristics, and when compared to humanity, it may be just as well that they are only fruits. Now a couple of you are late. Weren't in the class last week, so let's just turn there for a moment so you all get into the picture. Let's turn to that poem again on page 8 of your handout. And let's just test Joey's comments against the poem. So Tom, you can start. We'll go around the room, everybody reading a line. Big, loud, dramatic voice. Mangoes are not cigarettes. Second line for you, Thomas.
Mangoes are fleshy, skinful, passionate fruits.
Mangoes are hungry to be sucked. Mangoes are glad to be stuck in the teeth.
Mangoes like slush and kiss it. Mangoes are not filled with teeth.
Mangoes are
idiosyncratic.
Seasonal
seducers. Go for it.
Mangoes are worse than Adam's apple.
Mangoes are what parents and parliaments warn against.
Mangoes like making rude noises.
Mangoes are not extra mild.
Mangoes are greedy, delicious tongue teasers.
Mangoes are violently soft. Mangoes are fibrous intestinal love bites.
Mangoes like beginning once again. Mangoes are not cigarettes.
Mangoes are tangible.
Sensual.
Intelligence. Mangoes are debauched and astrocytes.
Antisocialites. Beautiful, Greg.
Mangoes are positive good in the world.
Mangoes like poetry.
Mangoes like poetry. So I think that Joey's got some really good ideas there. And look, I commented on his. I clicked on reply and I commented, Joey, this is an awesome summary of the key elements of our discussion on the mangoes. And you have added some important dimensions of your own. Yes, indeed, it may be just as well that they remain fruits, because we might be in a whole lot more trouble if mango activity took over the world, but maybe it already has. I think your insight into the paradox of sensuality is especially accurate, because, as you suggest, it raises a whole lot of questions about what morality is. Thank you, Joey. You could also try to import some visual elements to jazz up your blog. Because as you saw in Steve's blog, you can import photos, artwork, your own artwork, everything can go into a blog, so it's a kind of a space for your own expression. So that is, if I go back here now, that is the place where you do your blogging for the moment, practice blog space. Okay, so if we go back to Leo here, this is all the basic stuff you need at the start. There's announcements. There are announcements in there. And you've got most of this stuff, but here are some links for your writing. And this is week one. Some of you might have seen, I've got some blog topics there. There's a range of blog topics that you can use last week, and I've given new ones for this week. So you can choose from any of those. And up here, there are the slides that I used in class last week, and there's the audio recording. If you want to listen to what we did last week, I'm recording it all in here and I've put it into there. So it's all there for you to listen to. And even, you might have noticed that I have got some of the board illustrations that we had last week, and that reminds me, I've got to get this board over here. I didn't put this up, but I will need it. This is a little trap for the unwary. Class at the moment, Mary. Coming very quick. Yep. Yep. Quickly. Yeah. Email at me. Be better. Email at me. Okay. Thanks, Mary. Thanks for calling. Bye. So now we'll get this one as well. Is that your bag, Scott?
No, sorry.
Oops. Is that clean on that side? Wonderful! That's great. So, everything that happens in class goes into Leo, so you don't need to worry about missing out. That's not to say you can't come to class, because you wouldn't know how to use this stuff if you hadn't been in class. Now there's week two, look. And in week two, I've got the slides already up there that we're using today. There they are. stuff we're working on. And there's another range of topics for blogs. And it, at the top here, if you click on here, this takes you to my blog site. And if you look at my blog site and look at literature and introduction, well, there's all the stuff from last week, together with a summary of what we did last week. There's the blog topics written out again from last week, and there up here you can also listen to all the class if you want to without going into Leo, but I've done this for the learning partners so they can listen to what you're doing. But there's also already the beginnings of this week. This is week two. Okay, what have I written here? I've said, there's a picture of where we are, look. Hi all, I thought I would put your blog topics up here before our session today to give you a chance to think ahead about how you might use some of today's content in working towards your own blog entries. And remember that you've also got a short essay to do in a fortnight. And I'm actually going to give you a bit of practice with that today, so that you've got something to work with your learning partners this afternoon. We're actually going to get you to write a little bit about the Judith Wright poem, The Wattle Tree, when we get there. So it says, find a range of topics here. You only need to choose one, and you can draw on last week's list too if these don't strike your fancy. The important thing is to find a topic that fires your imagination. So what are some of the topics? Look, I've got creative topics. Take a single line from any one of the poems we've studied. For example, two roads diverged in a yellow wood. And use this line to build a poem of your own, using the poem from which you've taken the line as a guide to your writing. Or two, write a poem or short prose paragraph describing an object. Judith Wright describes a wattle tree. Richard Tipping describes a mango. Could be from nature or man-made, a tree, a jug, a carpet, a dog. Describe the object with as much detail and feeling as you can. They're creative topics. They're asking you to imagine. You can write it as a poem, or you can write it as a short piece of story, like a bit of piece of prose. Remember last week I was talking about the different genres of literature. Prose, poetry, and drama. And so you can experiment with that. There's no right or wrong. That's the beauty about this. You cannot go wrong. All you've got to do is put your fingers on the keyboard or your pen to your paper and just do it, and it'll be brilliant. Whatever comes out is good. It's not like maths, where you get failed for getting the wrong answer. Or like science or physics, where you get failed for not seeing the relationship of this to this. In literature, you can mix things up whatever way you want, even chaotically, and it's always good. None of you believe me. You're all looking at me saying, what's this guy talking about? Okay, critical topics. See, these are creative, imaginative. Critical is like what Joey did. Critical is analyzing something. So, for instance, analyze the meaning of any one of the poems we've been exploring. Analyze means explain, give your point of view. Simply say what you think the poet is trying to express and say whether you think the poet has succeeded or not. You can choose any one of the poems we've done. Mangoes, Wattle Tree. Second critical topic. You only have to do one of these each week. Only one in your blog. And you have to. It would be good to write on each other to say, hi, Joey, I think what you wrote was fantastic, but I think you got your words mixed up in your last sentence. That's great. That's what Joey wants to hear. He wants to hear when he's mixed up. And Ian wants to hear when he's fantastic. I thought that your blog was beautifully written, and especially the last line where you described the mango in all its beautiful colour. Ian, that was fantastic. In a short paragraph, say what you think the difference is between poetry and prose. This is another topic. Give some examples from the poetry we've studied this week and last week. And what's this very important business down here? Very important. Be sure to visit the blog entries of others in the group and make a short comment on their work. This is practice that we want. This is a practice that we want to develop for the whole group. For the moment, you'll find their entries in the practice blog space in Leo. If you click on practice blog space here, it will take you straight to where you need to be. In a few weeks, I will give you the option to do your blogs right here in WordPress. Then you will be able to have an international audience for your writing. Yoo-hoo! Internationally famous. Let me try and click on here. Let's see what happens when I click on there. See if I'm a liar. Oops, there we are, look. Practice blog space for introduction to literature students. So we're back in Leo. In fact, when you're on my blog site, just to go back there for a moment, when you're on my blog site, you see on the left-hand side, there are all these links. So you can go straight back to Leo, or you can go to ACU. You go to Leo like that, it takes you in, you've got to log in. So there's an interconnection between the WordPress blog site where I'm putting a lot of your content, but I'm also putting it in Leo, so you can choose. Any questions about all that? For some of you, it's as clear as mud. But when we get to the computer and you put your number, etc., etc., in and experiment with it and play around with it, it'll become easy for you. So we're going to go back to poetry now. And we looked at mangoes last week, so you're all up to speed with that. We're now going to go to Judith Wright's A Wattle Tree, and we're going to read it and talk about it. But have a look here. In 20 minutes' time, when we've talked about it, I'm going to get you to experiment with your own writing. And if you need help with this, I'll be able to give help. But your learning partners will be able to help you with this too. So let's just go through these questions, because these questions might trigger some of our thoughts as we read the poem now. What is the main idea in each stanza of the poem? Stanza is a verse, like a poem is sort of split up into, if you look at the poem on page, what page is it on?
20.
Page 20. Okay, let's find page 20. So you can see that there are four blocks of words. Those are stanzas. One stanza, two stanza, three stanza, four stanza. And, hello, you want to come in? Are you part of the group?
Michael.
Your name?
Michael von Bornaway.
Michael von, have you seen Francis? In the, if you've got the poem in front of you, on page 20, Michael, you might look over Ian's shoulder there, or Ash's shoulder, one or the other. You'll see that the third stanza is a bit different. What's different about it?
It's the shape.
The shape is different. Very good. The shape is different. Now, shape. So shape in a poem is a clue to meaning. Shape. And there's less of it. Yeah. It affects the rhythm of it. Very good, Michael. You haven't even read the poem yet, so you're really on the money. Well done. So what you'll see and what I'm trying to illustrate is that words used in poetry are a bit like colours used in a painting. Shape is important. It adds something. Shape adds something. We'll see what it adds in a moment. So what is the main idea in each stanza of the poem? So I was really explaining the word stanza there. Stanza is sometimes also referred to as a verse. They're sometimes synonyms. Synonyms. A synonym, anybody know what a synonym is? Synonym is two words of equal meaning. They're equal the same thing. For instance, tea and dinner are synonyms. Except if you go to dinner, you're expected to have champagne in a wine glass and tea, baked beans on toast. But basically, they're the same thing. There are lots of synonyms in the English language. Stanza and verse, that's an R there. Stanza and verse are synonyms. Sorry, Mike, I missed...
When journalists use two words for the same thing straight after each other.
That's right.
I forget what it's called.
It's called elegant variation. No? Okay. Rhetorical repetition.
Something like that.
Anyway, good. So, second question, how does the poet make the idea come alive? Because poems are ideas, but they've got life to them. So that's a tricky question, but we'll try and answer that when we come to it. What poetic devices does she choose to do this? Now, poetic devices, we talked about these things a little bit last week, and in fact I gave you a link, which I'll repeat for your... It's an important link. If you go back to... it's both in Leo and in my blog. So in my blog, if you go down the blog roll at the bottom, there is here, Help with Poetic Devices, number 7. And there's a whole list of all the poetic devices that you'd ever need to know. Things like the sounds of words, alliteration, assonance, consonants, etc. Rhyme, rhythm, etc. Then the meanings of words. Allusion, ambiguity, cliche, connotation, etc., etc., etc. These are the words that you will need to know once you finish your 4 units in the liberal arts certificate and you're at uni doing uni course in English with me or one of the other staff members. It will be expected that you know these words. So it's important to read the list and try and understand and maybe even try and use those words in our discussions where possible. A simile, we looked at this last week, for example, a direct comparison of two unlike things. He's as dumb as an ox. Her eyes are like comets. Personification, attributing human characteristics to an inanimate object. For example, the days crept by slowly, sorrowfully. Days don't have feelings, but day is being described here as if it's a person. So that's personification. So poetic devices, and what have I got written over here, look. I've got some examples of poetic devices that come up in this poem. Word choice. Now, a poet chooses words. And any poet has got millions of words to choose from, just like an artist has got millions of colours to choose from. And the word can be chosen for its meaning, but also for its sound. Word sounds in poetry. The murmuring of the bees on a summer's day. You select sounds that match the meaning. Go back to that Mangoes poem. Some of the meanings were very strident and harsh and were made powerful by the choice of the word sounds. Rhythmic devices, repetitions, rhyme. Images, what images does she use? Visual images, things you can see. Tactile images, things you can feel or touch. Kinetic images, things that move quickly. Oral images, things that you hear. Olfactory images, things that, what's olfactory mean?
Smell.
Smell, things that you smell. Okay, and last but not least, what figures of speech does she use? Does she use similes, like or as? Does she use metaphors, comparing one thing to another? Personification, onomatopoeia, onomatopoeia. Don't get too caught up on that word. It's a tricky word, but it means when words sound like what they're talking about. The most obvious example is the ducks quacked. Quack, quack. Word is built on the sound. But believe it or not, German ducks quack differently to English ducks. The Germans say, die Ente crasht. So in Germany, all the ducks go around saying, crash, crash, crash. But in England, they all go around, or Australia, go quack, quack, quack. So every country's got different ducks and different cats. That's the way it works. So obviously human beings hear things differently. So let's take a step backwards to the poem itself. Here it is, the wattle tree. So I'm going to read it once through myself, and then we're going to read it as a class in a way that I'll indicate. The tree knows four truths: earth, water, air, and the fire of the sun. The tree holds four truths in one: root, limb, and leaf unfold out of the seed, and these rejoice till the tree dreams it has a voice to join four truths in one great word of gold. There's the word of gold. And then the poet says, oh, that I knew that word. Oh, I wish I knew that word. I should cry loud, louder than any bird. Oh, let me live forever, I would cry. For that word makes immortal what would wordless die, and perfectly and passionately welds love and time into the seed, till tree renews itself and is forever tree. Now look at this special stanza, look what happens here. Then upward from the earth and from the water, then inward from the air, and the cascading light poured gold till the tree trembled with its flood. Now, from the world's four elements, I make my immortality. It shapes within the bud. Yes, now I bud, and now at last I break into the truth I had no voice to speak, into a million images of the sun, my God. Now you'll see, as you read the poem, that it has full stops in certain places. You'll see that in the first two lines, the tree knows four truths, dash, earth, water, air, and the fire of the sun. End of sentence. Next line, the tree holds four truths in one. End of sentence. But the next four lines, look, they cascade over each other. And there's no end of sentence at the end of the line. Root, limb, and leaf unfold out of the seed. And these rejoice till the tree dreams it has a voice to join four truths in one great word of gold. So, you know, like a musician, the poet here allows the lines to cascade over each other because she's trying to express something about the tree. So let's just read this first stanza. We'll start with Scott. And Scott, you read down to the first full stop. And then Nick, you read down to the second full stop. And And then, Jack, you read that long sentence with its cascading lines down to gold. Let's go.
The tree knows four truths: earth, water, air, and the fire of the sun.
The tree holds four truths in one: root, limb, and leaf of gold out of the sea. This rejoices to the three trees. It has a voice to join four truths in one great world of gold.
Beautiful. Now we're just going to stick with this stanza for a moment. We're going to see if we can work out what Judith Wright is trying to, what she is seeing, what she's understanding about a tree. Look out the window there for a moment. Turn your heads and look out of that window. You see the sun on the leaves of that tree. What is happening where the sun contacts the leaf of the tree out there? What do you think is happening? Do we have any botanists in the room?
Photosynthesis.
So the tree has got this incredible capacity to transform light into what?
Energy.
Into energy, into life. Light, life. And that energy is going up into the tree, into the seeds, to fall down. Unfortunately, there's just concrete and bloody, what's the other substance
asphalt
out there? Asphalt. So the seeds are going to, they're not going to get much chance. They're a bit wasted.
Unless birds swallow them inside.
Mike, brilliant. Unless birds swallow them and carry them over to the botanic gardens. Beautiful. That's what's happening in this first stanza. The tree knows four truths. What are the four truths that a tree knows?
The elements, the four elements of nature.
Now, what does it mean that it knows those elements, I wonder? Anyone like to add to what Chris has said? Yes, Scott?
It requires them.
It requires them. Very good. So it knows them because it needs them. Now, those four things, earth, water, air, and fire, what's important about those four things?
It's Greek elements. The Greeks considered them the basis.
The Greeks considered them the basis of life. They're the foremost fundamental constituents of all matter. So this tree is pretty bloody amazing. It's got its toes, its feet, its limbs in touch with the most important fundamental building blocks of creation. What's the next sentence, the one that Nick read? The tree holds four truths in one. What's Judith Wright saying by that remarkable sentence? What do you think, Greg?
Nature.
Good. The tree holds those four truths. They are nature. Nature holds those four truths. What does it mean to hold truths, I wonder? You got an idea about that, Joey? No.
They're a must.
Very good, Scott. They're a must. And the tree's got a capacity to hold this nature, these elements, holds them together. It's got that power.
They're all necessary.
Yep.
The air and the earth and the fire to turn regeneration.
All those things are necessary for the tree to regenerate itself. Now, what about this long sentence that Jack read for us? Root, limb, and leaf unfold out of the seed, and these rejoice till the tree dreams it has a voice to join four truths in one great world of gold. Now, has the poet gone off her rocker here? Has she become something more than a scientist at this point? Ian?
Slightly
got more than a scientist. So tell us what you think's going on here, Ian.
I have no idea.
You got some idea, because you know she's gone off her rocker.
Yes.
So what does it mean to go off her rocker? What is she kind of reaching out for, I wonder?
She's exaggerating.
What is she exaggerating? Is she coming back to, I haven't got it on the board here now. That's right, the gold flowers on the wattle tree. Fantastic. Okay, that's fantastic. Tom doesn't believe she's gone off her rocker. Now we're going to set up an argument between Ian and Tom here.
Yes, and we live on the same floor, so...
Watch it.
Root, you've got it out of the seed.
Yep.
You've got a sprout root, which then sprouts limb. then sprouts leaf.
Yep.
And all of that rolled into one, and it goes, it keeps growing and becoming bigger roots, bigger limbs, bigger leaves, until it's strong enough for the wind to catch it and blow it around and make it grow even more. And then that's when all the earth, water, air, and the fire all come into play.
Very good. Beautiful. Now, there's one other element, though, that we need to think about. And she talks about rejoicing. She talks about voicing. And she talks about truths. And she talks about wording.
Regeneration.
Well, what I was trying to get to is that this tree is sort of more than a tree in her imagination. It's becoming...
beauty.
Sorry, Scott?
The gold represents beauty.
The gold represents beauty. Very good. And what did you say, Chris?
Trees.
The tree is becoming a human. It's being personified. It's actually being seen as having a life and a consciousness and an inner wish to become something that we associate with humans rather than with trees normally. So that's why it's kind of, you know, it seems crazy, because how can we think of that tree out there as having more intelligence than us? But I tell you what, that tree's lived the darn sight lot longer than we have, and is going to live a lot longer than we are. And it doesn't have half the bloody troubles that we have. I reckon it's got far more intelligence than we'll ever have. Sorry, son. Next time. Yeah, very good. Nice analogy. Nice analogy. And poets and artists often see animal world, the natural world, as having a certain stability that humans don't have. Great. So we've done the first stanza. Let's have a look at the second stanza. Now the second stanza, let's read it. And let's have a look. We've got... first sentence ends with an exclamation mark. Oh, that I knew that word. So that's your sentence, Greg. And then, Ian, your sentence is the next one about crying louder. Finishes on the word bird. And then, Michael, you have got the one that ends with cry. And then, Ash, you have got a long four-line sentence again. You can see it's got commas at the end. It's got a semicolon. But, in fact, there's not even a full stop at the end of that stanza. But we're going to stop there. So let's hear how this stanza works out. Greg.
Oh, that I knew that word.
Oh, that I knew that word. So.
I should cry louder than any bird. Oh, let me live forever, I would cry.
Ash.
For that word makes immortal what would wordless die, and perfectly and passionate wells love and tongue to see, till time renews itself and is forever true.
Okay. Oh, that I knew that word. So in the first stanza, she has imagined this tree as having the power somehow to create one word of gold. And as Michael said, that one word of gold is the tree's capacity in a wattle tree to create this incredible mass of gold, which is like a reflection of the sun. But also, if you drill down to the details, every one of those flowers is like a little sun as well. So it's quite a remarkable tree. So it's a powerful image of the way that nature, sucking in all the dirty soil, the dirty water, the air, the fire, is able to turn all those things into a word of gold. So it's quite a powerful idea about how something can turn something into something else. So in the second stanza, she says, the poet says, oh, that I knew that word. What do you think she means by that? Oh, that I knew that word.
I was able to understand it. And...
yeah, exactly, Chris. Well done. Oh, I wish that I had the power... or I wish that I knew that word that the tree is able to produce, because there must be something amazing about a word that is able to produce that out of all that.
It's like plugs and coat.
Sorry, I didn't quite understand.
It's like plugs and the Australian coat of arms.
It's like the Australian coat of arms. It has the wattle on it. Very good. So the second line, the one that Ian read, I should cry louder, louder than any bird. I wonder what she means by that. Why should she? When should she? What should she cry? Why should she cry louder than any bird? What's the connection between that and the first line, oh, that I knew that word? Notice it rhymes. Oh, that I knew that word. I should cry louder, loud, louder than any bird. What does it mean, I wonder? It doesn't make sense. Sorry, Scott? Excitement? Very good. You've got the feeling of it. She's excited, and she would scream louder than any bird would scream if she knew that word. So Scott's on the money there. It's expressing her excitement that she's, in fact, she is beginning to understand something about the power of that tree. After all, she's written that first stanza. The third line, the one that Michael read, oh, let me live forever, I would cry. What does that mean in this context? Oh, let me live forever, I would cry.
Don't let some council idiot cut me down.
Don't let some council idiot cut me down. Fantastic. You worked for the council, Greg, did you? No. But that's a nice thought. So somehow this word, this tree, this idea, this word of gold connected in her mind with something that is eternal, something that can last unless it's cut down. The next, now, Ash's long four lines. Let's try and make sense of this. She's talking about the word of gold that she sees mirrored in the wattle tree. For that word makes immortal what would wordless die, and perfectly and passionately welds love and time into the seed till tree renews itself and is forever tree. And she's here talking about the flower, isn't she? She's talking about the flower of the wattle tree and its amazing power. What does a flower do?
Reproduction.
Reproduction. It's the source of the tree recreating itself. It's the source of immortality. I mean, there were wattle trees on this planet, let me take a guess, 3 billion years ago, and they're still here, still producing yellow. So that's a certain truth about the immortality of things in nature. Perfect. Go, yes, Chris?
There's a contrast between its beauty, you know, like it perfectly and passionately, but also the last lines, it's got a point to it. Like, it, as you say, it regenerates, it blossoms into the seeds.
That's right. It regenerates, it blossoms into the seed. And she's got this poet has got this idea in her head that to describe what goes on in the wattle tree is to really somehow come in touch with one of the great truths of nature, the great amazing aspects or qualities of what we find in nature, their incredible life that seems to come from nowhere and seems to go on and on and on and on. So in the next stanza, no full stops, and this is the stanza with these odd-shaped lines. I would like now Chris, first of all, and then Joey, and then Tom, and then Scott. We're trying to experiment here. Chris is going to say, then upward from the earth, and as he says it, he's going to stand up. And from the water, when Joey says that, he's going to stand up and stand down again. And Tom is going to say, then inward from the air and stand up and down again. And Scott is going to say, and the cascading light, and he's going to sit down and stand up. And Nick is going to say, poured gold till the tree trembled with its flood. And if Nick dares, he's going to put his arms out like this and make them tremble as he says it. Let's see what happens. Chris, go for it.
Then upward from the earth and from the water.
And from the inward, and in the inward from the air, whatever it is.
And the cascading light.
poured gold till the tin trembled with its flow.
Fantastic. Now you can see how these lines of poetry are also like drama. And, you know, we dramatized it, but they've got that quality. They're kind of turning an event, not just telling us an idea, but somehow breathing life into that idea through the shape of the poem, through the shape of the lines. Do you think you get that, Greg? Sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, shape. Welcome. Now, what was your name again?
Michael.
Yep.
Sorry, I'm getting laid down. Mong.
Mong, that's right. Mong. I remember Mong. M-A-U-N-G.
That's right.
And you're going to sit next to Chris here.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. So, Mong. And your surname is Ong.
Yes.
What a beautiful rhyming name. Mong Ong.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I love it. Mong Ong. Yeah. You haven't missed very much. We've been talking about this poem, The Wattle Tree, by Judith Wright, and I'm sure you'll hook into what we're saying. So, what is being said by these four movements, five movements? Then upward from the earth, and from the water, then inward from the air, and the cascading light poured gold till the tree trembled with its flood. What's this doing? What are these lines of poetry trying to capture?
All the truths coming together as one.
Fantastic! It's trying to capture all these truths coming together as one, like it's actually happening on the page. Upward from the earth, and from the water, inward from the air. So the poetry is kind of capturing, through the drama of language, capturing the actual force that's taking place in the tree. You know, that's the one of the amazing things about poetry, is that poetry doesn't just describe the world flatly, like prose does, but it actually tries to get the energy of the event onto the page through all sorts of devices, through sounds, through repetitions, through rhymes, through shape. Okay, so look at the last stanza. Okay, the last stanza, we've got one sentence that finishes with bud and one sentence that finishes with God. So I'm going to ask Mung to read the first sentence, which is the first two lines of the last stanza. Now from the world's four elements I make my immortality, it shapes within the bud. Got those first four lines? So when you read it, you can stand up because we want to hear this beautiful sonorous voice. And then the last part, yes, now I bud. And now at last I break into the truth. I had no voice to speak into a million images of the sun, my God. And Tib, you can read that one for us. And you can stand up and read that when we get there in your beautiful French accent. So go, Mong.
Now from the world's four elements, I make my
immortality.
Immortality. It shapes within the bud.
Yes, now I bud. And now at last I break into the truth. I have no voice to speak into a million images of the sun, my God.
Fantastic. And the million images of the sun, look at them. The one word of gold is the whole wattle tree, but it's made up of million images of the sun. Next time you go near a wattle tree, pick one of the flowers, and there's millions of those little suns there. Now, okay, well, the last stanza is her kind of summary of what she's been doing. Now, it's interesting to ask, is it a summary of what she as the poet has been doing, or is it a summary of what the wattle tree has been doing? And are these two things different or the same? Listen again. Now, from the world's four elements, I make my immortality. It shapes within the bud. Yes, now I bud. And now at last I break into the truth I had no voice to speak. Into a million images of the sun. My God. So who's speaking? Is it the wattle tree or is it the poet?
Both.
Chris, tell us why you think it's both.
Well, the first line two, she's saying, within the bud, I make my own immortalities. So she's saying, I have this actual
power, this process. Yeah, good.
Mixing the four elements. And then the game of Bud in line three, and she's sort of doing something she didn't think she had the voice to speak.
Very good. So the words voice and speak immediately kind of anchor it into the human. But she's also using the human to personify the tree. So her description of this amazing tree, which she admires for its power to turn water, earth, fire into gold, she's wishing she had that. And she's written the poem after all. Is she depressed anymore?
A therapeutic one.
A therapeutic poem. Now, I wonder if any of you have heard of this word. I'm sure you have.
Because the tree in Utah,
yeah,
goes all round and doesn't do much.
That's right.
In summer, she might be looking at the tree in winter and reflecting on her own life. But
yep.
In summer, she's come wooden and the tree's come.
Lovely. Lovely idea. Do you know what this word is here? Alchemy. Alchemy. Making of gold from lead. Or making of gold from other things. So there's something alchemical in this poem. Now, it is time for a coffee break, but before we go for a coffee break, I want you to have these questions in mind, because when you come back for 20 minutes, you're going to answer these questions in your booklet here. There's the page. Have we got a blank page just before or after? We've got page 22 is a blank page. So on page 22, we're going to get you writing and see the sentence structure, see how you can get your answer to these four questions down. So if you like, you can get yourself a cup of coffee and come back here and start the work if you want. You can do that. If you need a smoke, then you've got to go down there. I think you've got to down the bottom of the stairs. In fact, otherwise you'll have up the corner, is it? Otherwise you'll have Frances, she's got a rolling pin in her right hand, she'll come out and clobber you. I'm serious. That's right. Okay. So we're back here again at 3:10, so please don't be late.